Welcome to Idea Day, International Day of Experiencing Abstinence. My name is Lynn. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater and bulimic.
Hi,
hello, everybody. If you would like to, please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I did not know I was going to get choked up. This is a celebratory event recognized by Overeaters Anonymous worldwide, encouraging OA members to begin or reaffirm their abstinence from compulsive overeating. This is a day of celebrating abstinence. Abstinence is personal. There is no one definition for abstinence. Many of us have to try out various options before we are able to put together the abstinence that best works for us. To start off our program, I want to give you an overview of what's to come. We'll start by having our two speakers share their journeys of about 20 minutes each, however long their journeys really were, followed by time for sharing. We will then have a break about 2:30 and resume at 2:45 with our third speaker followed by an activity and then open sharing. As you share your experience, strength, and strength in OA, please also share your hope. Feedback, crosstalk, and advice giving are discouraged here. Crosstalk during an OA meeting is giving advice to others who have already shared, speaking directly to another person rather than to the group, and questioning or interrupting the person speaking, sharing at time. As we get started, we are prepared. We'll pair ourselves with a reading from Voices of Recovery. Are you going to read for us, Doug, please?
Hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
Except that we may repeatedly have the craving to eat compulsively. Experience shows us that such feelings will pass. Remember that every time we face a situation without eating compulsively, it's easier for us to abstain the next time. We can live without compulsive overeating. My compulsion is lifted most of the time, and I don't think about food. Sometimes, however, I still have food on my mind. I need to remember that I am not alone, that I am not a failure if I have food cravings. I have proven to myself that when I abstain, it is easier the next time. I strengthen the habit of abstinence. If I eat compulsively, I strengthen my compulsion. I may not binge, but my food thoughts increase and the problem increases. My higher power gives me the choice to be able to say, I don't want to eat that, to go down that path. I know what will happen. I have learned that I can turn aside, choose the path of abstinence, and continue on my way. The feelings pass, and after, often I forget the craving. Such a gift. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug. And I just wanted a personal thank you to everybody, especially Amy, who organized this and volunteered their time and volunteered speakers, and everybody who did service by showing up. So thank you all. And with that, we're going to start our program with our first speaker, Mandy.
Hey, everybody.
Hi. I'm Mandy. I'm a food addict, exercise addict, and compulsive overeater.
Hi, Mandy.
And just a quick announcement, usually on the holidays as well. So for Thanksgiving, there's phone marathon meetings, usually all day. So if you're tempted or having a tough time, I'm not sure what the number is, but if you go to probably OA.org, you might be able to find the number, or if you can also give me a call, my number's on the WeCare list, and I can direct you to a person who I probably knows the phone number. So just FYI if you're looking for some resources on that day. So I just want to take a moment to pause and pray. And just ask God to take my words and to be a maximum service. Like I said, I'm Mandy, I'm a food addict. So I just want to tell you briefly a little bit about my story. And I'm going to pass around my pictures. help explain the story a little bit, because I think a visual is very helpful. And then I want to talk about the tools, and then I want to talk about the steps, because I think partly our focus here today is talking about process and abstinence and what helps us maintain abstinence and get abstinent. So I want to just kind of give some practical logistical things that I do each day to help me stay sober so that I don't have to pick up the food and so that I don't eat no matter what, don't eat. So to kind of give you some numbers, I came in a program in 2002. And at the time, I was 19 years old. So at the time, I weighed probably between 180 and 190 pounds, and currently I weigh about 130. And so that if you look at body mass index scales, that's in the obese category. But I didn't think I was fat, or if I did, I thought it was because of my genetics. So that kind of shows the level of denial that, like, I didn't really equate that the food I was putting into my body was showing up on my body. I just thought, like, I'm one of the fat people, and there are fat people and thin people, and that sucks for me that I'm fat. And so it was really a wake-up call and a reality check when I came into program and I put down the food by God's grace to see just how much I had been consuming, and also to see how much food stuck around the house when I stopped eating it, you know. That was remarkable to me, too. Like, it just stayed and stayed. Because before I was like a vacuum cleaner, you know, it'd be gone. But kind of to address the progression of the illness and to give you a background, I think I already had a predisposition maybe to being sensitive and to carbohydrates when I was growing up. And it was kind of the family joke that certain things, like Mandy always, those were her favorite things. And I'm from Broomfield, and my dad would say, "Who's the Broomfield hog who ate all this?" I got good at fluffing packages or like rearranging food or manipulating things you couldn't tell, but it just got worse and worse. I would eat the food and then have to go out and rebuy it or steal it, and thank God to make amends for that. But you know, things like that, and as it got worse, it really exploded in college, and because all you can eat dining halls and vending machines, you could just swipe your dining card and it would charge it to your account. So that was like a big free-for-all. And I got sober halfway in between my college year, so in between my sophomore and junior year. And it was funny, like pre-OA, I knew where all the vending machines were on campus and all the secret like nooks and crannies where I could isolate with food. But then like post-OA, I knew where all the microwaves were to heat up my abstinent meals, you know? So I'm grateful that God intervened early, and it humbles me that at such an early age, my disease had progressed so far that I needed a 12-step program, you know. And it's interesting, too, because people would say to me on the phone, "Oh, you're so lucky that you have it now." And I wasn't feeling lucky. Let me tell you, I wanted to party and go to frat parties and be out with my friends, and luck was not how I felt. maybe a little resentment. But it really, the grace of God just kind of stepped in and took over. I went to a meeting in Boulder that was an OA meeting, and that's, I think, where I first got hope, because I saw people who seemed light and happy, and I really thought it was going to be people with dark clouds over their heads saying, "Oh, I binged," like kumbaya, so it was a relief to see that there was a possibility of recovery. I didn't know that. I just thought it was me and food and being fat for the rest of my life. And then I went to a meeting a little closer to home in Broomfield, and I didn't know at the time what it was. But there's a woman there, and she was speaking, and she was talking about the stuff she did, and she was talking about the tools and the phone calls and the meetings, and I was like, wow, good for her. You know, like, that sounds like a lot. She must be really into program, you know? But she called, that was on a Thursday, and she called me the next day, and then I returned her phone call. And the night before I returned her phone call, I had been with friends. I had smoked pot, I had come home, I had binged, I wrapped everything into one little wrapper instead of the size, so that it would only look like I only had one, and was in a food coma, and that's the state I was in when she called, when we talked the next morning, and she said, like, "I can sponsor you." And I remember thinking, how can I say no? You know, here I am in this state I am, miserable, pretending I'm not miserable. How could I say no? So she told me what to do, and I accepted her help a lot begrudgingly, because I'm an addict, you know. As much as I wanted to get better, I wanted my drug. And so She taught me what to do, and this is the same way that I still work with the program. So I'm going to talk about the tools, because the tools for me are what provide the structure so that I can work the steps and stay sober, and it gives me the logistics of how do I get through a day without eating. So what she told me to do, and what I still do today, each morning I get down on my knees and I ask God to give me an abstinent day or a sober day, and then I say the first three steps. I do a daily devotional thing, and I take quiet time, and then I commit my food. In the beginning, it was every day to my sponsor. Now I talk with my sponsor 3 days a week. But I tell her what I'm going to eat, and it's written down the night before. I make sure it's in the house the night before, so I'm not running around looking, where's my food? And then throughout the day, I make three phone calls to people in program. Those are actual conversations. And that's important for a number of reasons. One is it helps break the isolation of this disease. But also, most importantly, it's for the food. That if I have a question about my food, or I need to make a change about my food, or something happens with the food, that I'm talking with somebody about it. Because the problem, like the big book talks about, centers in my mind. So I can't, there's just a part of me that's broken that I have to accept that. That's why I need something external to help me. So even still today, if I needed to change my food, I would call my sponsor. And that to me is not restrictive. That to me is freedom. It is out of my hands. You know, I make that phone call, and it rarely happens now because I pretty much know what to do now. But I make that phone call and talk through with her, and then I'm free. You know, to me, the slavery, the bondage, is being obsessed with what you think I look like if I feel overweight. That would be the bondage. Having to make a phone call is no bondage. And then if I'm having food thoughts, also very important. And it's also important to get in the habit for me of making those phone calls, because I don't want to live so close to the edge that I'm on, like, on the precipice, if that's the right word, that will I eat, won't I eat? It's like I wake up in the morning and I know I'm not going to eat today. I'm not cocky about it, but I'm not afraid about it. But I'm not like, ooh, did my dollar get stuck in the vending machine? Close call, thank you, God. You know, like that to me is like too late. If my absence depends on whether or not my quarter gets stuck in a vending machine, I'm over the line, you know. So I want a contented, solid sobriety, and that's what we can have. So making those three phone calls a day, so I'm in the center, so I'm not so far on the edge that a phone call is going to make or break it, you know. That and I tell people, I'm honest, like if I do have food thoughts, I talk about it, and it's usually maybe I'm bored at work or something like that. It's not physical anymore. And then, like I said, writing my food down the night before, and then making sure it's in the house. And then before I go to bed, I read a page of the big book, or like do my 10-step stuff and say thank you, God, for a sober day, and then do the first three steps again. So that's kind of the structure for the day. And then I do three meetings a week. In the beginning, there wasn't long-term sobriety where I was with food, so I did three meetings and an AA meeting, but now I do three OA meetings each week. And I do one in Brookfield on Saturday mornings. It's also a phone meeting. And then I do usually a phone meeting on Sunday evenings, or I come down here once a month to help address the exercise addiction and the exercise bulimia piece, because there's a Sunday evening bulimia meeting here. And then I also do a Thursday evening meeting at South Broadway Christian Church. And in my meetings, we focus on recovery. We talk about sobriety. You know, that's my message. You know, bring my message to my sponsor and the message to the meeting. And then for my food plan, I mean, OA doesn't endorse any specific food plan, but I'll tell you what I do with food, because to be honest, like if you're struggling with the food, I'm not going to say, figure it out. You know, I'm going to say, here you go. Like, do you want to be saved or not? You know, and I think that's not true for everybody. Different people have different things. Everybody's different. But I'm saying, if I have a way that saved my life, and I literally mean that, why wouldn't I share that? You know, why wouldn't I offer the opportunity to you? So what I do with food, I weigh and measure my food, so I have a stopping point, so it starts and it stops, and then it's done. You know, because food is tricky. It's always keeps us on our toes that, and somebody stop me when I'm out of time. But, like, I'm an addict. When I set that ball rolling, if I don't have a stopping point that's clear, that's outside of my head and my stomach, my own inertia or momentum will bulldoze over any boundary, you know? So I need a clear boundary to stop. Even to this day, I don't think I'll ever be so cured that I can intuitively eat. Just, I'm a human being, and I can't be that connected with God all the time, every single day. So I eat three meals a day, no more, because I need to deal with food as minimally as possible. if somebody's diabetic or pregnant, there might be a reason for a fourth meal. But for me, I don't have any of those conditions or medical anything like that, so I just have the three meals. I don't eat flour, I don't eat sugar, I don't do sweeteners of any type. I don't use spices except for sea salt for low blood pressure that my sponsor suggested. And in the beginning, that tasted bland, but like after about 90 days, the physical's out of the system, and now I don't have those cravings. And I can honestly tell you, I feel blessed. Like if I say, "Oh, I have food allergies," people say, "Oh, I'm so sorry. What are you allergic to?" And I said, "Oh no, don't say sorry. Like this is my salvation. You know, this is a blessing in my life." My meals are 4 to 6 hours apart. If I need to make a change, I need to call my sponsor. It needs to be for a good reason, not just like, oh, I feel like eating something different. It has to be something like something spoiled, or I dropped something or something exploded in the microwave and I don't have anything to replace it, you know, and then looking at how can I prevent things in the future so that those instances don't happen again. But my meal plan is very portable. I've been all over the country, you know, I've been to weddings and funerals and through graduation and like catered events. So the only time I don't weigh measure is in restaurants, but I have a plan. I call the restaurant ahead of time and I say I have food allergies. You know, and they usually say, "Well, what are you allergic to?" And I say, "Well, it's kind of complicated." So I'll just tell you what I need to order. And I just say, "I just need a special order, some things that are plain. Do you have plain this, plain that?" And I'm trying to refrain from mentioning specific foods just in case anybody's in a vulnerable or weak place. So if you have any further questions, you can ask me afterwards. But I call ahead and I just make sure I can get what I need. And if they don't have certain things, then I'll bring it with me. And the thing is, never is it so important others' opinions of me over my relationship with God. You know, if I'm thinking, "Oh, well, maybe somebody will think I'm weird." You know, really, you know, when I had 50 or 60 pounds extra on my body, that was the weird thing. So I carry my little food pack, and I feel weird. So it just helps, like, a perspective shift that the God is the most important. What God thinks of me is more important than what other people think about me. I pretty much bring my food wherever I'm going, or I always make sure I have it with me. It's my first priority. Even today, doing my food prep, making sure my lunch was in place, that's my first priority. And because I'm a food addict, you know, this is a serious, serious, deadly disease. I don't mean to be dramatic, but I know people who have died from this disease or consequences to this disease, my dad being one of them. It hits home. My job today is to break that cycle of addiction. That's the most important thing I do without exception. My biggest service is to stay abstinent no matter what and not pick up the food today. Because if I break my abstinence, we're down a doctor and up a patient, you know. And if I just stay abstinent, I have the opportunity to do any spiritual house cleaning that needs to be done. But speaking of that, regarding the steps, the tools help me get a structure so that the floodwaters can kind of recede a little bit from my house. But then if I'm not working the steps, like, the house is still flooded, like, and crazy and chaotic. So with the steps, and part of what I do is, and some of you might be familiar with it, it's called the Big Book Step Study Process. And essentially what that means is just working the steps as laid out in the Big Book with the help of people who've gone before me who've done the same thing. I at one point did a 12-step study with a closed group of folks. But now for several years now I've been doing that Big Book Step Study Process. So that's looking at, just as it talks about in the Big Book, what is the real nature of our powerlessness? You know that it's there's the physical allergy and the mental obsession and the spiritual malady. You know, it's threefold. That's why psychology and counseling only address the mental, and diets only address the physical, church or religion or whatever only addresses the spiritual. And I need everything. Like, I'm high maintenance. I'm physically allergic to certain things, meaning I have an abnormal reaction. People get stung by bees, they swell up. I eat certain substances, I crave. Like, that's how it shows up. Thanks. So... and that, to my knowledge, is never going to go away as long as I'm in this body. So when they talk about I'm not recovered, I'm not cured, I agree with that. But the Big Book specifically says multiple times for people who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You know, so there's a debate, am I in recovery? I'll never be recovered. But I'm like, the big book says recovered. You know, it doesn't say recovered so that I can drink alcohol again, but it does say recovered from the hopeless state of mind and body. So I'm no longer hopeless. Like, I have a hope. I have a solution. Let me tell you about it. You know, I don't have an eating disorder anymore. I have an eating order. And then with that, though, the problem centers in my mind. And what helps me understand that is if I was allergic to bee stings, the thing is just stay away from the bees, you know? Like, then you won't have a problem. But my mind says, that hive looks interesting. Like, it's been 90 days since I've tried that hive. Or maybe that's an organic bee, you know? Or maybe I can do a low-fat bee, you know? And, you know, so that the problem starts in my mind that says, like, why don't you go check it out, Lola? Maybe you can handle it. What's the big deal? You're making such a big deal of it before. It's not that important, and don't take yourself so seriously. Or frankly, it doesn't have any thought at all. Like, either there's that peculiar mental twist, or there's a mental blank spot where it's like, I don't even know what happened. There it was, and I just ate it, you know? And so that's why my defense must come from a higher power, from a spiritual solution. Because if I've got a problem physically, and I've got a problem mentally, like, I can't solve it, you know? I am powerless. I am dead. And this is what somebody explained to me powerlessness was. Like, to be powerless is like dead. I mean, I can't even reach out and ask God for help. It's like God just has to come all the way over to me. And then once that happens, though, I do have to take certain actions. So, thank you. So spiritually, there's the malady. There's that maladjustment. So I give it to God in step two, like believing that God can do it. And then the third step is like letting God take over. And then 4 through 9 are the action steps. So it's all divinely ordered. First, I get right with God in 1 through 3. And then I get right with myself in 4 through 7. And then in 8 and 9, I get right with my fellows. So, you know, it's like first God, like God has to align me, and then I get right with myself, and then I can move into other areas. But if I'm trying to make amends and God's not in charge, or if I'm trying to make amends and I'm still bitter with somebody, like, watch out. That's going to cause an issue. So in the fourth step, I look at my resentments, who I resent, why, what about it, does it affect my basic instincts, does it affect my self-esteem, security, ambitions, personal, sex relations, where was I afraid, dishonest, selfish, and self-seeking, and what's the truth? So to just briefly give you an example, like, say, I'll do something simple, I resent somebody at work because, ooh, this is a good one. this just shows you how petty I can be. I was at this person at work because I said hello to her, and she said hi back, but there's no eye contact. Like, where's the eye contact? You know, like, can you acknowledge me as a human being? So apparently the problem is in me, not her. Maybe she's busy. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't revolve around me. But looking at my lies like it should revolve around me, that made me less than, that who does she think she is, the lie that what she thinks of me makes me okay enough, and it's my job to teach her the truth, and then turn around, what's the truth? That might not have anything to do with me, and it's not all about me, and she had her own agenda. And even if she was thinking, I'm not going to give Mandy eye contact, I'm going to make her feel less than, she doesn't have that power. That power is God's, you know. And so then looking at my fears and like relationships, and then giving it to God, cleaning a house, making amends, thanks. And making sure that when I do make amends, I talk about it with a sponsor, because that's a very... We don't want to cause more harm. We don't want to be selfish. So it's really important to talk it through with somebody, because when I start going out into the world and putting these principles in real time, I mean, that's the awesome part and the miracle of it, but I want to make sure I don't cause more harm. And then 10th step is kind of like doing a daily 4 through 9. And then 11th step, just once I've been restored to sanity because I'm now unblocked, then... with the 11th step, then I can get knowledge of God's will for me, and he'll absolutely give me the power to carry that out. And then as a result of working the steps, we get the spiritual awakening, and then we practice these principles in all affairs and try to help other addicts. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Oh, done. Thanks.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Thank you very much to Mandy. And we now have approximately 10 minutes for open sharing. So if anybody has something that they would like to say, please come up to the podium so we can record.
My name's Amy Fudatic-Lemick.
Hi.
Thank you so much. I've always, you know, I need to hear over and over the how-tos, because my head has a way of complicating everything, and oftentimes I get disillusioned in this program because I want to get good. You know, I don't, and sometimes I confuse that with abstinence, and I just, it's so important to me to hear when somebody says, work the steps, what does that mean? Because I can just go into la-la land with that, so I really, really appreciate that. And also the whole thing about being recovered, because I thought, the food does not call me today, you know, and sometimes I don't want to tell people because then I won't be one of you kind of thing, but it doesn't call because I do certain things every day so that it doesn't call me. Is there any illusion if I were to go back to the binging, the purging, the sugar, the alcohol, the laxatives? I'm a lunatic, you know, and I love that thing is that bottom line, my contribution to society, which I always wanted to be, have a sunset with Bangladesh and go hand in hand fixing Africa. You know, that was my idea. And that really, because of my ego, having it in place through doing 11th step and doing service is just to stay abstinent, because I was rip-roaring doing a lot of damage and I hadn't even really gotten started yet. When I'm in the food, it's all about me. The self just blows up. So I'm really grateful for that. And the other thing is that somebody said something and it was an aha of this whole thing about abstinence is not to become model-esque, you know? Somebody shared that abstinence is about getting a food plan that makes me healthy so that I can live a healthy life, so I can tie my shoes without having a coronary. You know, that's abstinence. And these steps, the more you practice them, it is natural for me today. I don't know how to live without them. It's not like it puts me on a higher moral ground. It just gives me a way to live. And so I'm really grateful, and I'm really moved. Thank you, because it's so, I don't know if you guys have resistance to coming to these things. I want to come, and everything gets in the way. And so it serves my spirit just to see people. I'm not alone. So I'm really grateful. Thanks.
Thank you.
If anybody else has anything to say, we will.
Thanks. I'm Tom. I'm a food addict and bulimic. And it was interesting to thank you for your share, Mandy. It was really it was good for me to hear it because about a little more than a month ago, actually a month ago tomorrow, I started putting into place the kind of program that you described where first thing in the morning I get up and I read and I write and I pray and yeah, I read the big book, I read other literature, I pray, you know, I do a variety of things, and I talk to my sponsor, which is something else that I got a sponsor that I could talk to every day, and I've done that every day for the past month, and the last couple of days, I was in a meeting. And I go to a meeting every day, so that's the other part. I made a commitment to do 90 and 90, which has been really interesting, a really interesting process. And I have so many things that I can act out. And I actually go to last week. I went to 8 meetings in 6 traditions. So, if anybody can beat that, see me afterwards. So. You know, but one of the meetings I went to, you know, they talked about, they had a reading, and I don't know if it's in the big book, I think it was in the devotional literature they use, but they talk about this rebellion. Mm-hmm. In the last couple of days, I've been feeling this rebellion, and I didn't even know that I was feeling it until kind of afterwards, going, what's wrong? And that was, it's kind of like, you know, what I've started to think of this is like going to the gym. You know, you go to the gym, and you kind of establish a workout routine. And you get stronger, you get healthier. There's all sorts of benefits to, you know, the physical activity, right? And so I call this my recovery. My morning routine, that's my recovery gym. I go to the recovery gym. Well, the last couple of days, I've had really crappy workouts. You know, I've only done like half the workout. I got off track. I got my schedule out of balance. You know, rather than getting up first thing in the morning, which I've been doing, you know, I kind of laid around in bed. I've got this smartphone now, so now I can, you know, I can read everything. You know, I can read the newspaper. I can read the, you know, and I'm doing that instead of putting that. And And when they talked about this rebellion at this meeting I was at yesterday, I said, oh, yeah, I'm rebelling. You know, cause, and whether it's my disease saying, I want you back, I miss you, you know, because it's a really good sweet talker, that disease. And, you know, whatever it is, or if it's just my own reluctant nature, you know, whatever it is. But so this morning, you know, I did the full thing. You know, I added a few, you know, I did everything, and I was very particular about that. I think that's part of it. You just have to be aware. I like the, you know, it seems kind of wacky when you think about all the things that we do to maintain this, but when I think about all the really years I wasted being wasted, you know, in my, whether it was on food or something else, it's not odd at all. It's maybe the healthiest thing I've ever done for myself. And the thing about it is that even just after 30 days of really upping my game, so to speak, with program, I'm seeing the promises. You know, I am. And it's like, and part of me's gone, you mean this stuff really works? So I'm very grateful. But it's not, you know, what we're doing is not easy. And it's not, you know, it's not for the weak-kneed or faint of heart. I mean, even when we're imperfect, I think that we really deserve, you know, to first and foremost, you know, pat ourselves on the back and then be just grateful to our higher power and everybody around us. So, thank you.
I'm Lynn, recovering compulsive overeating and bulimic. And I just was thinking about garbage in, garbage out, you know, and the opposite, you know, work in and health out, you know, just that you get out of what you put into it. And I also, it's really important for me to tell on myself. And I want to tell you, you know, talking about how for this addict, for this compulsive eater, for this control freak, you know, it's really weird for me to be in a room that's set up like this. I want it to be in a circle because I'm used to a circle. And I had a therapist who once told me, you know, you have an adjustment reaction to adulthood. It's true. So I have an adjustment reaction, and that's where, you know, I want, and, you know, it's no wonder that I ate, because I was trying to control the world. And I was trying to make everything happen the way that I wanted it to happen, the way I expected it to happen. And, you know, we all know expectation is a premeditated resentment. And I was just resentful and angry at everything because it wasn't the way that I envisioned it. And so I, opposite the tools and the working on the gratitude and the working on the prayer and working on the, you know, let me be grateful that this room is full. Let me be grateful that I'm in a room of my fellows. You know, let me be grateful that I am able to be of service, that I am, you know, that I get out of bed this morning, that my body functions. You know, I can go on about my gratitude, but I'd rather focus on the negative. You know, I'd rather tell you what's wrong. And that's the exercise. And the more that you do it, the more that I do it, the easier it becomes, just the same way as the food. The first time that I ate three full, you know, healthy meals in a day, I thought I was going to die. You know, and then it got easier and easier and easier. And the same thing with the mental and the same thing with the spiritual. So that's what I got. Thanks.